This is Robin Ayoub, your favorite podcaster and thought leader, and you are tuned to the Localization Fireside Chat. So let's cut through the noise and get straight to it. What you're about to explore with me today and Dr. Deepak Buthra, it's about bold ideas. It's about real conversations, decisions that they are sharp, that they're reshaping and defining the industries, regardless which industry you're in, and redefining the future of our global communication. So let's dive in. My guest and the guest of honor today and our guest speaker today is Dr. Deepak Buthra. And Dr. Deepak, I met you before. We've had a short conversation. We've been planning this podcast for a while, and finally we get together. So thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. As we say, Deepak, on the channel, everybody's got a story. Let's start with this one. What's your story?
What's my story? Yeah, I'm not going to go back into biographical. Oh, it was an agonizing July, and my mom was in labor, and my dad was concerned that is this baby going to arrive on time or not? Sir, I was 3 weeks late, but my mom has forgiven me for that. She does remind me of the size of my head, and she keeps reminding me why I should love her unconditionally because of the size of my head. I respect her for that. She has been a guiding force for me. So, Robin, I did 30 years in the corporate world. I worked across the globe. I come from an enterprise sales background and a very deep sales operations background. So when people ask me, Deepak, what makes you get up with excitement in the morning? It's actually sales productivity, efficiency, and doing anything in sales that can just improve things. For me, sales is a noble profession, and that's what I've kind of focused on. I left the corporate world, Robin. I said, you know, during COVID, I had some loss in the family. I got COVID twice. My voice changed permanently. And I asked myself a simple question. So you're going to retire with a nice 401k, but is that what you want to be remembered for? And that was the trigger for me to say, you know what, I want to do something different. I want to spend the last 10, 15 years of my life putting my energy into something that excites me at my pace. So I actually went and I became a Sandler trainer. I bought a Sandler franchise for Texas. I'm building that business out. I do sales consulting. What's been exciting for me is that, Robin, as I started working with sales people, founders, startups, I realized that I'm actually enjoying this. And I'm actually doing very well with the startup community and the early stage guys. I've actually now got six partnerships as a strategic advisor. They've offered me strategic equity because most of them are broke. If you asked me a year ago, Deepak, is this how you saw your entrepreneurial venture or journey going? I would have said absolutely not. I was supposed to go X direction. I'm kind of like 0.2X and more like 2Y, gone in a different direction. But guess what? I still feel directly I'm enjoying myself. So here I am, sales coach, sales trainer, business consultant, all wrapped in one.
Absolutely. And you forgot that you're also a best-selling author. Am I correct with that? You've written a couple of books. We've talked about them before, right? There are so many credentials for you. I mean, there's always a possibility of missing a few. I was so impressed when I first met you.
Here's the fun part. I wish my wife could hear that because I wish someone could tell her that, be impressed by him. I think my wife and my mother are the two people that keep me grounded. My mom at age 11, asked me a very simple question. What are the four things that you're willing to do in life that you want to commit to it right now? And I committed to four things. And what's really hilarious is one of them was that I want to be a doctor. Now, at 11, when I said I want to be a doctor, I was trying to be what my dad was. He was a medical doctor. Well, unfortunately, I passed out in the very first time that my dad took him to work with me. Now, my dad is a forensic pathologist. So, Robin, you can just assume that he took me to a mortuary. I saw dead bodies. I saw blood everywhere. And I passed out. That was it. That was the end of my medical career. But since I had made a promise, I did end up getting a doctor degree in business administration. And interestingly enough, in sales, job satisfaction, and organization commitment. But here's the fun part, you know, Robin, when people ask me, now I do brag about the doctor part, and you can see it in my title, but I never refer to myself as a doctor in front of my dad because he cuts me to size. He says, first of all, I have no clue why universities give doctors to jokers like you who didn't do a medical degree. And I'm like, but no comment. So no. For him, saving lives, giving life, giving help to people when they really need it is the highest, you know, category. And for him, a doctor is supposed to do that. So I don't want to compete with him. But I do believe that in the role that I have, I do give salespeople hope. I do give them sales longevity. And yes, the authorship came about in the funny thing, Robin. I first wrote a fiction book in aid of my mom. I wrote it on a character that I based on her. Unfortunately, the character and her lover die in the book. So my mom and dad were depressed. But as good Hindus, they do believe in reincarnation. So I promised them a sequel. That book did okay. I did, and my publisher called and said to me, I'm a bit surprised. You got 2,000 copies out, sold in 2 months. So let's do this in Hindi. So Robin, I had to dig in deep because I haven't, you know, really written or spoken in Hindi that much because I've been a global citizen. Went back, and thanks to ChatGPT and getting into the grammar books, I worked with an editor and we actually took that book into Hindi. We had fun with that. Then after that, I had my own personal tryst with mental health. Some family members very close to me that I saw struggling with it. And I realized one thing. Everyone is after success. Everyone is after ambition. But no one is slowing down to ask themselves, what's the price we pay for this? Now, sales actually has a huge problem, Robin. 35% of salespeople will leave the function by age 35. That's massive. 35% by 35. The number is actually higher, but because it rhymes with 35 by 35, I brought it down. So I ended up writing a book, What Makes Us Human Fails Us Too. And it's just a story about this guy at work who actually loses it and ultimately has to leave and exit the corporate world, and it takes some time to rehab and rehabilitate. And that's the message. And my book is coming out in October end, Robin, which is Rise Up, Your Career Reclaimed. I just took it to the next level. So I've shown a light on mental health and burnout, but what do you do about it? So that's why I wrote another narrative, and I brought in some fictitious characters, and I actually built something out that would help people understand how to manage upwards, how to manage your time better, how to take care of yourself, not from a spiritual or, you know, a physical or eat better point of view, but just from managing your time, managing your obligations, how to talk to people, how to converse with people. Very different track. So that's my genesis. I do passion projects. And if you have passion, then Robin, you know what I mean, right? Passion will set you free.
Absolutely. Passion is the fuel, I feel like, the in fuel. many Absolutely. Jobs. And, Absolutely. You know, the old saying that says, you know, do what you love. And that's what they mean by that. I think it's that passion that drives you to do what you love. And,
Spot
you know,
on. I would agree with that.
And you know, it's very interesting statistics that you've recited there, Dr. Bhutra. The one of the things that really interests me is that, you know, people leave, salespeople leave at 35%. You said 35% at the age of 30 or
by
35.
Age 35. Yep.
Yep. In your experience, what is the reason for that? Are we selecting the right people to go into the sales profession initially? Are we doing the initial filter at the front end of this? Or people are drifting to sales because, you know, happen to be good talking person or good conversation person. And then all of a sudden somebody says, hey, you know what? You could be good in sales. And then all of a sudden they become a salespeople. A few years later, they don't like it.
You know what, Robin? There's so much in that question of yours. I'm going to unpack this very gently, right? So here's the reality. Sales, I believe, is a chosen profession. People are attracted to it because, one, it's uncapped income. Two, if you have certain characteristics, you stand out and people would then tell you, hey, why don't you come across into sales? Now, the reality with sales is that it's actually a thankless job, right, Robin? You kind of know that, right? On Monday morning, you are the man because you got the biggest deal. 2 weeks later, your quarter's looking like crap. Your forecast looks like, we ain't going to make it. Or your colleague is not going to perform. Therefore, your manager says, buddy, I need you to step in and take one for the team. Here's the fun part in sales. You find yourself taking one for the team all the time. You find yourselves going through a roller coaster of emotion. Even the most resilient salespeople ultimately at some point sit back and say, oh my God, what is all this about? It's a thankless job. Yes, there's an upside to it. But at the end of the day, I also met people who told me, because I pay salespeople top notch, therefore I don't understand why they're complaining. Wait a minute. So what that means, Robin, is that if you are earning a great salary, then I can treat you in a disgusting manner. I can make you work 24/7. I can use language which you and I would consider to be bad, right? And that's where it started hitting me that what's going on here? What's happening is very simple. People join the sales function due to an attraction. And look, the real people who will survive is those ultimately that are a bit of a narcissist, maybe who can, you know, subdue their emotions, plus are totally motivated by money. I personally have exited enterprise sales twice in my career, once at age 33, when I came back from a platinum club visit to Cape Town with the family, came back and I begged my boss, I just really don't want to do this anymore. And he convinced me to stay with him. And he said, I'll coach you and I'll work with you and blah, blah, blah. At age 35, I went back to him again. And I said to him that I just don't know what's going on. He then asked me to do something very different, Robin. He said to me, why do you want to leave? What if I double your salary? I said, that's not the point anymore. I cannot perpetually be at stress. I don't know how to manage myself. And I need to do something different. But I love sales. And that's how I ended up in sales operations, Robin. So to answer your question very short, people are attracted to sales. The retention strategy is where the problem starts. And the problem, there's something you said, which I want to just pick on. Ask yourself a simple question. the person that hired you is the sales manager, right? So sales managers are pretty good at getting rid of the bottom 25%. Who's getting rid of the bottom 25% of the sales managers who hired the wrong people? It's not a hiring dilemma. It's not. You cannot tell me. And by the way, that statistic of 35% by age 35 is wrong. The real statistic is 57%, Robin, just FYI. We'll leave enterprise sales.
Okay.
1%. Now, if you want to flip a coin, that tells you that we don't need sales managers, do we then? If 57% tells you, you just need to flip a coin. If anyone comes in for an interview, if he's got a good piece of paper, give him a chance. That's all it means then.
And yeah, this is why ultimately... 50% is very high.
It's very high. So what you're saying is flip a coin. That's about it. Hiring, then what? The notion that people are being hired incorrectly, I think, is a misnomer. I don't think I would go that way. What I would rather say is that we hire based on what we see at that stage. The problem starts when the reality hits us. You know, like they always say, right? When the goings get tough, that's when heads start rolling and we run a headless chicken, right? Who keeps their head? And it's not easy in sales to keep your head. And today, where we are post-COVID, working from home, youngsters today don't come back, follow the rules of the game that used to happen before. Sales managers need to understand. In the old days, when we said there are two ways to manage a salesperson, and Robin, you will smile when I say this. It's either the carrot or the stick.
Carrot and stick.
I assure you, in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, the way the carrot and stick work was exactly the same way. They both hurt. I think you got the point, right?
I did.
A carrot and a stick. You are supposed to have an imagery where it says the carrot is the motivator, but no. The way the carrot was used was actually to give you the same pain that the stick would give you. Today, people don't tolerate that. Nor are we in a pay phase where people would proudly say that I was in sales with IBM for 10 years. Mm-mm. Those days are gone. You're now going to see people, by the time they get to IBM, would have done two or three stints already. So long-winded answer, but I'm just going to just answer that question the way you raised it, is that I seriously believe that sales coaching has to change. The way in which we are interrogating our salespeople as well as how we work with them has to change dramatically. Absolutely. And in the age of AI, this is going to get even more important because now the human touch is going to start being missing from all this interaction. So how do you ensure the human touch still remains? This makes sales coaching even more important in this day and age.
That's right. That's right. You're going to make a difference because otherwise, why would we deal with a human? Then we could default to dealing with a machine down the road, right? So
you still have to prove
your edge as a human being, being a salesperson. You know, those statistics really, I'm always like, I've been doing this for like almost 40 years in sales. I've done them in various capacity we've talked before the call. And one thing strikes me, like in all of the sales capacities that I've held over the years, it starts with the strategic direction of each company, right? So that has sales teams. And the strategic directions sometimes are overblown, in my opinion. You know, you have a unrealistic expectation. You've committed to a board. You've committed to the owners. I don't know who you committed to. And then all of a sudden, you know, like they say it rolls downhill and I'm not going to, it rolls downhill and it sits on the sales shoulder, right? And we always talk about three things to make a successful formula in anything you do in sales. You need a good salesperson, you need a good product, and you need a market that wants the product. Any of those three categories is missing. I feel, you know, it's not a successful formula at all. And then the easy way out for any manager or VP or CEO of a company, fire the salespeople. And fire the salespeople, hire new ones. And then we go through the fire salespeople again. Like it doesn't stop in one cycle. I've seen companies go through multiple cycles of firing salespeople. So are they all bad? Are they all not deliverable, not delivering results? It can't be.
Here's the fun part. Here's the fun part, right? let's look at this mathematically. Let's take emotion out of it. Let's first address this strategic notion that you have. I've always argued companies that talk strategy typically talk strategy as a vain way to survive, to ensure that they don't go extinct. So all you then get is white space, blue ocean strategy, and all these big words, right? At the end of the day, Robin, you know what's going to happen, right? You start a journey. Someone gives you a map. The map is very clear. It says you will do this, you will then do this, and then you're going to turn this way, right? Now, I have a question for you. You start your journey and it starts raining like crazy. Is your map going to help you at that point? What happens then? That's when the human ability to make a judgment call kicks in. And to me, sales is the highest pinnacle of where the judgment lies. People tell me that salespeople are scripted individuals. And I keep telling them they may start as scripted, but the top salespeople are not anything like scripted. Nope. They know frameworks. They know what's going on. And if you are scripted, let's ask you a simple question. Robin, you and I in a play. you and I are in a play and I am the love of your life and you have to give me a dialogue. There's an X on the floor. You stand here, I stand here, and you say your line. Oh, you are so beautiful, Deepak. The sun shines on you and the moon, you know, bows to you. And I look at you and I am now thinking, what's my line? But Robin, you know my line because it's a script. And because you know my line, you say, ah, but I'm sure you are speechless, my love, because you're thinking right now of the rivers. And I say to him, yes, you're so, you know me so well. I am thinking of the rivers. And the show's going on, goes on. So we use the word script, but guess what? Sales is an unscripted territory. Now, there's nothing happening that's going to get you by surprise. So now comes the mathematical question. So sales is 25% or 20% of the guys will make 80% of the number. This is a statistic I've been watching.
Oh, yeah, 80-20 rules everywhere.
And it freaks me out how Pareto's principle has survived, and it will survive. If that's just reality.
That's right.
Now comes the best part. Then the sales leader tells me, okay, the bottom 25% have to go. So the first question I ask him is that who hired the bottom 25%? And he says, I did. I said, so what happened then? What changed? Because something must have changed for 25% people to lie in the doldrums now. And typically this 25% is the ones that don't get the love and affection. Now, who gets the love and affection? Typical sales leads or sales coaches are going to go with the top 25% because now what's happening is, ooh, Benny is about to close a multi-million dollar deal. Let's help him over the line. Here's the fun part. Even with or without your help, Benny would have still crossed the line because he's in the top 25%. He knows what to do. But because you have this thing that, hey, my thumbprint has to be on the deal, therefore you're going to over-invest in it. Now comes the question you're asking. You know that 50% in the middle, Robin? Those are the guys. And I keep begging sales managers and sales leads, focus on that middle 50% because those are the guys that mathematically will over-deliver. Benny is going to do his stuff. But it's the Robins and the Rogers who are in the 50% that need your help. Because mathematically speaking, one guy's had an outlier. And if you could push some more guys up, your overall average will rise, right? Now let's move to the bottom 25%. Another thing that I've noticed is that managers today are struggling. Because Robin, as we get automation and as we get reduced budgets, the span of control thing has gone out of control. There used to be a time when people used to tell me the magic number is 6, the magic number 7. Someone told me magic number is 11. I am now seeing sales managers running enterprise level teams with 25 people. And it just makes me ask myself, wow, even if you dedicate 2 hours per week, where are you going to get 50 hours per week from to handle those 25 people? That's mathematically impossible. And then you tell me I work 80 hours. Well, you work 80 hours because you have a defunct and a system which is devoid of logic when you set it up like that. And I think that's what I would argue. Now, the 50% in the middle are the ones that actually need the most focus. And today, my only guidance to people is focus on mindset more than on technique. Most sales managers are spending tons of time on technique. Hey, buddy, I saw you open with that line, and then I saw you handle the pain funnel discussion using these questions, but I didn't like the way you went with that. The right question should be, hey, Benny, I have a question for you. Usually, I notice that you ask specific series of questions. This time, you didn't do those questions. What was on your mind? That's a better question because now what you're doing is you're going to let Benny admit to you he screwed up. And when he tells you he screwed up, then you're going to ask him a simple question. So how are we going to do it next time, buddy? What's going to change? How are you going to make sure? Do you want to sit with me? Let's practice this together. Let's help each other. That conversation is not happening because everyone is focused on outcomes, not behaviors that go into those outcomes. So for me, behaviors and attitude is more important than technique. Technique can be learned and unlearned, but behavior and attitude need constant.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page on the process can be taught, but you need the mindset to be there so you can work with something. Because process, product, information, all that stuff can be taught. You cannot change the individual. That's why I asked the early question, are we selecting the right individuals to get into the profession of sales? Not because you were an engineer at some point and then you found out you're an outgoing person, then you become a salesperson. They may not, you know, they may not congeal together. They may not work together. Your previous job as an engineer, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but likely not.
There's a truth in what you're saying, because Robin, if you look at the math, right, if we say that 57% people leave, we have to assume that not all of them are from stress or burnout. Some of them may just be bad performers, right? I'll admit to that.
Yep.
I will also say to you that even if you assume that the bottom 25% is in that number, 57% is still a very high number. Now, if we do some more investigation, you'll also be surprised to learn that in my own career, I've noticed one thing. I've dealt with, I would say, at least 50 salespeople that were PIP'd and then given the marching orders. Of those 50, 55, I'm literally going to give you the names. if I look at them on LinkedIn today, they're all doing very well. They're all at sales director, VP level. They just had to do very well at some different point in the game. Now, did they leave the sales function? Not necessarily, but did they do something to change themselves? Most likely they did. But at the same time, and I'll be very man enough to admit, 50% of the achievement by the top 25% is also a function of just sheer luck, great territory, and the market.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know how to say this to you. I mean, when I started my career, Robin, you're going to fall over laughing here. My very first deal, $250,000. I'm going back to the early 1990s. I'm sitting there overweight with my only single jacket that I could afford, bursting at the seams, tucked the stomach in, and I started presenting. And as I started presenting, I was literally not clear what to say. Suddenly the door opens and one of the directors of my company walked in, found he was in the wrong room, said, "I'm sorry," and he exited. My customer asked me, "Who was that? Was that Stefan?" And I said, "Yes, it's Stefan." He says, "I used to be in high school with Stefan. Could you call him quickly?" I went back, got Stefan. The two guys were high-fiving each other, hugs and kisses. And then they went out, said, "Let's go for lunch afterwards." And then this customer looks at me and says, "Hey, buddy, don't worry. Anything that Stefan is part of, I trust fully. Call me on Monday. Let's do the PO." And I'm standing there like, but I have a script I prepared. So Stefan came over to me and says to me, "Take it. Relax. It's done." And he went off to lunch with this guy. And that my first deal was a complete fluke. Till this day, I am so upset about that, Robin, that I could not do my pitch. It doesn't feel like I earned it. It happens, right? You take it in stride, because there are many deals where I felt I earned it, but I didn't win those as well.
It's hard work plus luck. You need hard work, but you also need luck.
Yes. And I will be the first to admit
to it. I mean, not just in sale. That's in everything, really. Yes. I mean, if you don't have the luck factor, you need something to go right. A lot of people, it doesn't matter what they do, like, you know, surgeons or engineers, or I pick on engineers a lot because I worked with them for a long time. And so, you know, a lot of times if things don't go well from a positioning perspective, or the stars are aligned, for the lack of a better word, yeah, you can do a lot of hard work, but things are not going to move in your direction. So it's a bit of both. And I do agree with you. If you look at the numbers, if you look at the stats everywhere, you're right. That by saying that a lot of these high achievers, luck has been on their side. If you look deeper into how they achieve their numbers, you know, I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying percentage.
I think we agree with each other. I also think that those at the top also know to make their luck as well, right? They do certain things, but they figured out. They are also one step ahead of the game. They will see a trend, they will latch onto it. They will see a certain customer behavior, they latch onto it. They will see a competition trip, they will latch on to it. And I think when you take these little notches, ultimately the tree will fall. So they sometimes create their own luck also. And I don't know how to explain it to you, but it's as follows, right? Lady luck comes to the door, she rings the bell, but you're busy sitting there in front of the TV eating a burger, and you're like, "Come on, I don't know who it is." But then there's the other guy who says, "Wonder who that is." Goes, opens the door, and she says, "Hey, here it is, 6 numbers for the lotto. Enjoy." I just tell people, do the hard work. Yes, there is luck, but because there is luck, don't stop doing the hard work. That's all I'm saying to the people out there. That's all I say to people. That's all.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so what's going on in the industries right now, in the enterprise in general, and especially now with AI and everything else that's going around from a tech perspective, people are trying to restructure their companies for one reason or another. There's always restructuring, right? So every quarter, in some companies, every quarter they restructure. That bottom 30 always leaves the company at the end of the quarter in some companies. You know, I don't want to name one of them, but one of them in particular was a high-tech company out of San Jose. It was a known fact till today. You know, 30% of the bottom salespeople leave every quarter. And still, I think it's a common practice everywhere. Now, you've talked about, before we did this a podcast together, we talked about, you know, the job loss and how to cope with job loss, and how do salespeople, like, you know, absorb the shock, wait, and then do something. And could you, in your expert opinion, you know, because of a salesperson, I'm assuming because of a salesperson lost their job, we're not writing them off as a salespeople. They still have a chance out there because we need more salespeople. Otherwise, I don't think the economy would function. But we still need salespeople. So how do they deal with how do salespeople should, or in your opinion, deal with a job loss, and how do they repackage themselves for the next gig?
Robin, I'm going to slow down on this one because it brings back bad memories for me personally, right? 27 years old, wife is pregnant with my first child. I walk into work on a Monday morning. We have a 9 o'clock meeting. My boss doesn't arrive. All six of us sales guys are looking at each other. What's up? Someone else walks in and says, "Hi, I am the interim CEO. I was appointed by the board this morning. I've just come in to explain to you guys that your manager, by name, has had a difference of opinion and is not with the organization anymore. We are deciding what to do, but I just want to give you guys a heads up. We are preparing your letters. You all are terminated." And then Mr. Best, which I remember his name, I will not use his first name because I'll be too close, Mr. Best and Swivel walked out. And I sat there completely confused because in my entire life, I had never thought that one, I would be impacted. I always thought it happens to someone else because I'm working my backside off, right, Robin? How could it ever happen to me? So I'm sitting there in a daze. I look around and I say, he said six, right? Oh shit, there are six. I was hoping he said five. That means I'm still alive. So I looked across at my colleague and I said to him, I didn't understand what he said. And he looked at me and said to me, "Deepak, you're the smartest guy in the room. We all just got canned, man. What did you not understand?" And he looked at me with such pity and he walked out. And I was like completely confused. So I stood up, walked out. And Robin, I just had a dizziness. I walked into one of the empty boardrooms and I stood there and I said, "Now this is where the head trash comes in, the way you are raised. Face saving. How the hell am I going to tell my dad and my mom and my wife that I just lost my job?" And Mr. Ayub, I stood there and I started crying. At age 27, I am standing in this room crying because I'm completely confused. Because to me, it was, this cannot be happening to me. I work so hard. This is all wrong. It's unfair. And I'm saying this because this happens to people even today.
Oh yeah, everywhere.
As I'm doing my little sob story, I kid you not, the same Stefan in my earlier story walks into the room on his, in those days, we had the clunky, chunky, big Motorola phones. And he walks in, he sees me and he's like, "Oh, whoa." But he sees me crying and he stops. He says something in Afrikaans to the guy because he used to work in South Africa at that time. Put his phone off and he looked at me and said to me, "I just heard the news. Please don't tell me you're crying because this shit company did this to you." And I said to him, "What do you mean? Of course, that's what I'm crying for." He walked up to me and he said something to me that changed my course for the rest of my life. He put my hand and he said to me, "There are bigger punishments life is going to give you. You're going to lose your parents. You may be going to lose a child. Never, never, never cry for a job. Just don't do that. Now, you are treating your job like it's your identity. It's not your identity. You are bigger than that." So I'm looking at his face and he says to me, "Now, what are you going to do about it?" And I said, He said, "Exactly. Stop moping. Sit down. Here, pen, here's paper. Write down the 10 names of people you know who you need to call in the next half an hour." I mean, he filled up his phone. He gave me phone numbers for 3 recruiters. He called all 3 of them in front of me. I had a job in 3 weeks, Robin, because that man made me take action. Now, since that day, I promised myself a couple of things. Now, that doesn't mean that that's the last time it happened to me, Robin. It happened to me again. I lost my job one more time. And this time I was a director. But this time when I lost my job, I had built a network far bigger than me, both in my corporation and outside. So I felt more comfortable. And that's the message I'd give to people. This is how you rebuild yourself once a layoff off happens. Very simple. And it's a very simple script, literally, that I'll rattle off to you. Because I actually ended up building it, what I call a rebuild framework, Robin. First of all, I want people to understand that what has happened in the role. It has happened in the professional capacity, not in the personal capacity. And It's a flip of a coin, right, Robin? You can have the best of people getting shafted.
Absolutely.
And by the way, look, we are not CEOs. When CEOs get shafted, they get a couple of $1 million as a giveaway or whatever. I don't think that most
parachute.
Of us get that. Or golden parachute, right? Most of us don't. What we actually get is a lump of iron in our throat, which we can't swallow, nor can 100%. We get out. We feel bad. We feel bad. So I've always said to people one thing very simple. A layoff is about a paycheck. I get it. And you're going to reflect upon it. I get that. And I know you're asking yourself, but who am I without my number? Who am I without a job? Just stop that. when I was thinking about this, I actually created a framework which I actually use quite a lot when I am doing my coaching work. And I'm going to quickly walk you through it, Robin, right? So it's called the Rebuild Framework. And the R stands for resilience. I want you to feel where you are, but I then want you to move forward. Give yourself 24 hours to do your crying and moping. Be in shock. Label it as shock, anger, fear, whatever. Label it. And then take that piece of paper and do closure with it. Chuck it away. Move forward. It's a very simple thing. Now, behind resilience, there's more that we do in terms of a framework, but that's just a high level to it, right? Then the next E is simply emotional regulation. Calm down. I have actually found what works for me, Robin, is a short walk with the dog, a cup of hot tea, cold water, and actually some solace or some solitude. Work on it myself. Then the next thing you need to do is just, you know, reframe your story. You know, what's your belief system? I lost my job, therefore I'm not valuable. You need to go away from that and start talking about, I lost a platform, but my value is still with me. And that's reframing is very important. You also need to stop unlearning what you thought you knew about the world before that. You know that what you're doing. There was maybe you're doing chronic overwork. Maybe you were reactive in what you were doing. Maybe you did make mistakes in terms of your title and you're addicted to your title. Did you do any mistakes? This is now the time to unlearn those mistakes so that you're ready for the next round. Your identity, figure it out. On a score of 1 to 10, your role can be a 5, but on a score of 1 to 10, your identity always has to be 10. Come back to that. That's the I in rebuild, right? The L is nothing more than learning. How are you going to learn and move forward? Learn about the new employer, learn about the market, learn about things that need to change. And the ultimate thing ultimately is direction. This is where you get your resume ready. This is where you need to pick your lane. Don't chase logos. Chase either broad industries, you know, chase the motion. Look for that stage do you want to play on. And then sit down and figure out, in the same way that everyone says that they have a cadence, 30 cold calls per day, 10 customers, proposals per week, stuff like that, 2 events per quarter, same principles for job building as well. Set down, build a cadence, get some direction to it. So that was the rebuild in a very quick summary of how I typically work with people on this, right? And this is the catch here, is that now be very, also anticipate that you're going to get laid off. So Robin, I always tell people, what does your profile say about you? So I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn profiles. So in fact, I spend so much time on it that I'm actually laughing at companies that today specialize in telling you about the, so companies like, you know, Civil, Humantic, and these are tremendous, awesome products they've built, right? They look at the LinkedIn profile and try to tell you how to sell to that person. Here's the bad news. That profile is not written by that person anymore. It's written by ChatGPT and written by consultants like me who actually help people to position themselves. We also teach them how to network with people. We also teach them how to comment. So I wish everyone good luck who is trying to extrapolate understanding of human beings from their profile, because that's not, it's the same thing with CVs, right? Resumes. Robin, if you pick up a resume today, they're all shiny and sweet because ChatGPT.
It doesn't mean anything.
Interviews are only where it matters now. And for interviews also, people have to be ready now because the game's going to change. The first interview, the first resume is going to be AI going forward.
But it's happening on the same end though, Dr. Bhutra. It's happening on the other end, on the recruiter side too. Recruiters are using AI too, right? So most of these profiles in LinkedIn, the profile or resumes, their sole purpose, in my opinion, is to figure out what kind of keywords I need to put into these profiles so I can go through the bot that is being that's evaluating these things.
Robin, $1 million point. And to all B2B sellers listening in, I want to caution you guys. You think you're smart with your ChatGPT and custom GPTs issuing out LinkedIn DMs and emails and RFP analysis and how to write an executive summary. The buyer on the other side is 10 steps ahead of you. In fact, I would argue, previously when we used to get called to come in, the buyer was maybe 10, 20% sure what he wanted. Today's buyer, I would argue, is 50 to 70% sure what he wants because he's done enough. I mean, I personally have chosen software based on analysis done on ChatGPT. In 20 minutes, I have the most complex table showing me all the positives and negatives about everything. And that already whittles it down to one or two. I mean, you are right now on Riverside and I use StreamYard. In the entire analysis, these were the only two. And even in that, ChatGPT gave me 10 different reasons why StreamYard is better for this scenario and why Riverside is better for this scenario. And it blew my mind. Now, yep, can you imagine that power being used for deals, for products, for services? Amazing stuff is happening out there.
I'm not sure if you had a chance to check it out, but I had a podcast done with E.A. Clark. He's an owner of a company in Ottawa and Ottawa, Canada. And he focuses on, instead of people applying to a job, he focuses on selling to the candidates the company. So the candidates, the good candidates, they want to be convinced to work for a company now versus you know, just go apply for a job. And those 1% talent that you're looking for, and I guess everybody wants those 1% talents, they need to be sold to. So it's more of a, why is it telling the story of why is it good for a company to go for work?
Exactly. It's Robin, let's go back to the good old days, right? When we were studying, you'd have the brown bag lunches, right? Recruiters would come to the campus and then sell you why you should work for them, right? And I think that we have gone from beggars cannot be choosers because I want the job. We need to get back to where, and I think AI actually allows us to do that. So as an example, Robin, I just did 3 AI interviews, tested the tools for a couple of companies, and I got paid for it. And it blew my mind. Boss, it blew my mind. I tell you one thing, forget the recruiter now. The recruiter has access to such advanced tools that when I did my interview in 15 minutes, we covered more ground than a normal recruiter would have covered in half an hour, far more. It takes what I said and it kept going in deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper to the point where I cannot BS anymore. Because if you don't know your subject, you're now in the weeds and you're lost. If you know your subject, then the weeds is the right place because it's taking you down so deep. And the highest score I got was 68. And someone told me that's actually a good score. I'm like, what? That's a good score. He says, yes, because AI is aggressive in how it measures. Robin, it's happening. It's going to happen. Recruiters are going to get more powerful because they're going to integrate AI into their thought process. They're going to integrate AI. The first interview is going to be AI driven. You're going to have ATS scores plus the first AI interview scores in it. While your recruiter is sleeping, 1,000 people will get interviewed overnight because the system can interview multiple people and the system gets smarter and smarter and smarter
as it learns, right? People.
It learns and it's going to learn about that specific job spec. So I do like this human intervention, which is the company is selling to someone. Absolutely. The mindset ready for that? But I do believe AI can help in that a lot. AI can actually try to build a bridge between how the company sells its message to this individual because it understands the individual also. Then you actually temper or you moderate your selling position for the company and why it appeals to this person because that person's value system needs to also be taken into consideration. So I think it's a great step.
When we talk about AI and human versus a human in terms of either selling or evaluating salespeople, etc., we also talk about emotional fluency. I know this is one of your favorite terms per the prep that we did.
Yeah.
What's the definition of emotional fluency in this case? I know there's the human element, but I'd like to get your feedback on that one.
Robin, it's pretty simple. We use these words consultative selling, use this word trusted advisor. And successful salespeople, those 25% rock stars that we spoke about earlier, there's one thing about them. They have mastered the context of the conversation with the customer. They've mastered curiosity. They know how to ask the right questions. And they also know how to hold the room because they regulate the way that they communicate and they regulate the temperature in that room. And that can not be done by AI. Those three things, context setting, curiosity, how to ask the right questions. Now, yes, AI can go through a mechanical process and can get better at it. But AI is not there in the room with you at that point. At that point, it's you yourself. So judgment. As long as judgment remains with the salesperson, that's why that emotional fluency remains with the salesperson to close the deal. Look, 40 years ago, my granddad and I used to work in a store and he didn't know the word B2B. But he used to call his selling function as belly-to-belly selling, Deepak. I do belly-to-belly selling. And I used to never understand that. Basically, it's talk to the consumer. Hey, Abdul, what's up? Abdul says, going bad. And he says, okay, so what can I help you with? And Abdul says, I want to buy a shirt. And he says, okay. But Abdul says, but you know what? I have a problem. Can I pay you next month? And my granddad would have no hesitation. Because that's just how, of course, Walmart wiped out people's smiles like my granddad's, right? And that store is now defunct. He had two stores and he built his fortune from those two stores. And the entire retail thing has been flipped on its head. But there's few things that I learned from that man. It was very simple. Emotional fluency will always remain with the human. When you are selling to humans, understand that very clearly. Yes, a lot of your work will be done by it. And I can predict one more thing. And this, Robin, upsets a lot of people when I say this. You're not going to lose your job to AI, Mr. Salesperson. You're going to lose your job to another salesperson who's using AI.
Absolutely. That's what my next topic is going to be asking you about. Absolutely. Augmentation. A lot of people are using AI for augmentation because most companies are trying to do less, more with less, meaning that you had a support layer around you as a salesperson, and now you don't have support sales layer around you. You used to get a lot of marketing, you know, support from a top of the funnel activity. Now it's your responsibility. Yeah, marketing is still there, but I don't know how much are lasered in, are zoomed in on, you know, actually developing lead gen more than awareness. I think marketing right now is just being made used for awareness. That's it. But developing actual leads to feed the sales machine. No, that lead gen now, it's focusing on, it's being, you know, subcontracted or put in the box of responsibility of a salesperson. You have to generate your own leads.
Here's how I would look at it. And here's my caution with people using AI for lead gen and, you know, for automating messaging and stuff like that. I always ask people, I want you to just put AI aside. Just put AI aside for 1 second. Show me how you do things today. And when they show you how to do things today, you'll actually realize that the way that they are, let's say, categorizing their ICP is flawed. They're using Sales Navigator. Every lead gen company starts with Sales Navigator. And to be honest with you, boss, I've been with Sales Navigator for more than 10 years of my life. It is rudimentary because LinkedIn is not stupid. They don't let you integrate anything with it. They don't let you take it out and into a CSV. They give you fields. They allow you to only take 25 at a time. Maximum list can only have 1,000 because they're not helping you sell. Helping themselves make money. They want you to keep paying them more and more and more. So when I look at Sales Navigator and I ask myself a simple question, when you were not scaling with automation, how many leads per day could you tackle? 10. Of those 10 leads, how many were you hitting? 30% would convert only. Okay, now we have a number. Now show me what you're doing with automation. Now what he's doing is the same rule, the same navigator rules. Look for VP, look for someone who posted in the last 30 days, same rules of engagement. But now instead of doing it 10 at a time, he can do 1,000 at a time. Robin, now what's going to happen is that your ratio is still bad. It's still 3 out of 10. But because of the sheer volume that you've created, you think your diary is full of entries and meetings. But on a relationship basis, it's not. Now, here's the bad news. Your diary is still going to have, instead of 10 meetings, 100. You can't do 100 meetings. So you need to figure out what to prioritize. So this is why I keep telling people, first get your basic process articulated correctly. Look at your current ratios and then put an objective. If I get 3 out of 10, I want to get only 2 more meetings because you cannot sustain 6 more meetings. What are you talking about? And why would you do that? Because you also need to pay attention to your customer. So I can do 2 more meetings. Okay, great. So what will you change in your process to take those 2 more meetings? And now let's talk about AI and automation to see whether we can give you back those 2 meetings or not. Personally, in my own business, I'm fully AI integrated. I am having a conversation with you at the end of this call. Well, this is Riverside, so this transcript is not available to me. But typically in a coaching session, if I'm with a customer, Robin, for 8 sessions, I now have 8 transcripts. Mm-hmm. Each of those goes through a very detailed review. And every time I meet a customer, on my screen is actually the past, today, what we're going to talk about, and the future. At the end of it, I give my customer a customized playbook of him, not anyone else. And that blows their mind. Because in 8 hours, Robin, you can actually get to know a person very intimately. I have seen CEOs write books of 300 pages by giving an interview for 8 hours. Can you imagine then what I can achieve in 8 hours? And that's the power of, I cannot do it without AI. The human brain cannot comprehend that much information.
No, it's so like, I have eight, like your co-pilot, it's like your drone beside you that's helping you, that's augmenting who you are, not replacing you though. This is the confusion. People think of AI as a replacement. I think of it as an augmentation.
It is an augmentation. And I'll tell you what, in fact, my joke was that
the AG is simpler. Some people are lazy, Dr. Butra, right? Some people are very lazy. Forgive me for saying this. I've met a lot of people that just wish to have an automated button pressed somewhere and the money start flowing in. I don't know how that works. I haven't met it yet.
And I'll tell you why that illusion is created, Robin, because if you go on LinkedIn today, you have all these geniuses. Hey guys, I have analyzed 500,000 LinkedIn messages and I'll tell you the formula that works. Here's the fun part with that. And Robin, this will make you fall out of your chair. Robin, the average family size in the US, I was told, is 2.4. Robin, please go next door and find 2.4 people. You will not find it. You're going to either find 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. There's no 2.4.
Yeah, the 0.4 is people, in the freezer.
Bingo, because most likely got hit by a car and they had to put half here and half here, right? So what are we talking about? And this is the problem with people. They don't understand mathematics. They don't understand, but they hear this and they suddenly realize that, oh, wait, someone analyzed half. Well, first of all, analyzing 500,000 posts doesn't take that much time. No one sat down and read it. You know, one thing is saying that I scanned the entire Bible and then I went and I asked a question and I got an answer in 1 second. That doesn't make you smarter. It made the AI smarter. The question I'm asking is that, what did you do? yourself to actually get that knowledge. So when I am with the AI, and when, let me tell you a true story. I work with I actually interviewed eight top rockstar B2B sellers, and I asked them a simple question. How do you use AI? I mean, blew my mind. These guys are using it as an augmentation tool. It is not there to replace them. They actually ask intelligent questions. They start broad, then they start diving in. And you know what they do really amazingly well? They ask a simple question. I know how to win this deal. How can I lose this deal? Please analyze this. Here is my understanding of what the competition is up to. And he types in his notes. Then he says, and I lost the last deal. And here are the notes from the loss analysis. Where do we need to beef up? And then you're going to get insight that'll blow your mind. Then you ask it another question. Here are my last 25 Excel spreadsheets for the pricing we did. Here is the data on the deals I won. Do you see a pattern that I need to be aware of? Previously, people used to need code to do that type of stuff, right? You need to actually bring in something from IT and say, hey, buddy, I need you to draw some sort of regression analysis and show me in a cluster, in a picture. Man, come on, stop. The times are changing. Here's another thing I want to share with you, Robin. This will blow your mind. Each and one of those eight people is spending about $200 to $300 per month on non-company AI investments.
They have you're reading my Amex expense report now.
They have their own, how do you say, gems made in Gemini. They have their own this, they have their own this, they have their own this. And then on top of it, they have their own Apollo scraping infrastructure.
100%.
Now I ask them, wow, and what did the company give you? And he looks at me and he says, yeah, okay, I use that too. But to be honest with you, I get more benefit by having control.
100%.
And I think that's the difference this time. Previously, when a company gave you a CRM, you were obligated to use it and you were stuck because you didn't know how else to use it differently. Now you've got this democratization, the force is now with you. And when the force is with you, you make movies, right? Star Wars.
That's right.
And that's what's happening. The guys are making their own movies because they have the forces with them. And that is amazing. So you now have this, what I call bring your own AI, shadow AI all over the place. Your data, your competition data is going all over the place. And I have no clue what companies are going to do about it because trust me, in my own business, Robin, I am 5x more value I add. Every customer of mine tells me, how do you know me so well? I know you so well because I'm asking the right questions and then I'm actually having interrogation to ChatGPT. And I seek the permission when I take the transcripts also because I want to make sure that I don't fall foul. Because as an ICF coach, ICF has very strict standards, Robin, on how we use this information. It's like you're with a physician, right? You say certain things. I mean, he goes blabs it to your wife. That doesn't isn't right, is it? Or he leaves your file in public domain. That's not right, is it? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I hope that helps.
No, this is very interesting, Dr. Bhutra. I'm really enjoying this conversation. But unfortunately, I could talk to you for 2 days because
it sounds like
you and I have a lot of things in common. Have been through what you've been through. And I'm at the fork of a road right now after I finished working with my current employer and looking ahead here. I only left like in the past few weeks, so I'm doing the pause thing right now. So, but there'd be an announcement coming up in the next few days, and I hope everybody would be excited about that one too. So I'm already excited.
I love announcements. I love reveals.
You love reveals, right? So I'm definitely, you know, like there's a everybody when we parted ways with my previous employer, everybody was talking about me retiring. And I keep telling people, are you crazy? Retiring, what does that look like?
You know, Robin, my dad retired at 60 because he was a government employee. And at age 60, he got to retire in South Africa. He retired on a Friday and Monday morning, he was back at work because the guys gave him a contract. Similar role, but slightly different. And 60% pay, he took it. He worked for another 5 years. They made him retire again at 65 because another rule got broken. They brought him back on again. He just moved to a different role. He kept working till age 70. Robin, you know when he retired? He retired when he finally said, hey guys, shit, I have a cataract in my eye. That's the only time he stopped.
Thank God, you know, as long as you have your health,
keep your brain occupied. In fact, my dad's argument is, damn it, you guys made me retire. And guess what? The second I retired, I got cataracts. That's his argument.
I'm not even 60, for God's sake.
Exactly. So, and to be honest with you, in this day and age where brain power, where AI, and you know, there's so much happening out there from an advisory capacity also, right,
sure.
Robin?
I see what you do is very interesting. And I want to continue this conversation, absolutely, you know, down the road. I hope you come back to the channel and continue the conversation with me, Dr. Bhutra. I'd love to stay up to date. I work in an industry that I feel they can use a lot of sales support, I feel. And because our industry, similar to some other industries, not all of them, they use the formula of build it and they come. That's another topic for another day.
That's
altogether.
Another topic. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you
yes,
know, you sir. build this store and you expect people to walk in, line up to the corner. I mean, this is all good and dandy, but that's the 90s. It doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. And so yeah, that's why you need salespeople to drum up business for you. So, but in any case, I really, really enjoyed this conversation, Dr. Bhutra. I hope
My pleasure,
you grace me Robin. With your presence one more time. Or
and thank you for allowing me to talk so long and so quick and so fast. But Robin, always a pleasure talking to you, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And I really want to thank your listeners. I hope they sustain this and I know last till the end.
Absolutely. And we've covered a lot of topics here today. This is for the audience. I hope you've gotten some good nuggets out of these conversations. I hope you're taking some notes. If I was you, I'd be taking a lot of notes. We will be putting this podcast in a blog form and summarized. We'll summarize it in a blog form for people who do not want to probably take the time and listen to the entire episode, but we'll summarize it in a key points highlighted in a blog post. The podcast itself will be posted in the next two, three days. Today, we're recording on October 14th, Dr. Bhutra and myself, but this will be posted in the next few days. And I want to thank the listener for tuning in and listening to the Localization Fireside Chat today's episode 122 with Dr. Bhutra. I hope I get to see you guys in the future episodes. And Dr. Bhutra, any last few words for us?
No, sir. Anyone's looking for me, you'll find me on LinkedIn. Just type my name in and there's only one bald old guy constantly yapping about B2B selling on LinkedIn. That's me. You'll find
and we'll
me.
Include Dr. Bhutra's information in the description and the tagging of the social posts. We'll put it in the video description and the podcast audio descriptions. So you can easily find Dr. Bhutra and he's connected to me. You go to my network, you search for Dr. Deepak Bhutra and you'll be able to find him. Thanks so much for everybody. Thanks for listening in and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for
joining. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Robin. Bye-bye.